Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Yeah, he was loud. What about it? He's supposed to be loud. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Columbus, Ohio. And the Karma Train, well, first of all, I should say that we're, you know, my buddies and I are on the road touring the country. For information, unwig.com. And just a friendly word to the folks in the areas where we're still to come and the areas where we're traversing by bus right now. If you want us to visit your town, fix your damn roads. Or we should fix the damn bus. I don't know, one of the two. The Karma Train, ladies and gentlemen, speaking of vehicular traffic, is approaching the station for the first time since it began. Sirius XM satellite radio saw its number of subscribers decline during a quarter of the year, indicating a rocky road ahead, says the Wall Street Journal. Ooh, the Karma Train rides on rocky terrain. Company officials blamed the bad economy. Well, wouldn't you? And poor car sales. The head of the company, who would like me to mention his name, says it's reviewing all its contracts, including with on-air talent, to see where it could make cuts. Howard, you stepping up? I'll spank starlets for $1 million a year less. Right now. Now, Robin got the news for you. And the company also said, and this would make me want to invest right away, it's stepping up efforts to market Sirius and XM satellite radio to buyers of secondhand cars. And that whole junker market just beckons right beyond. The Karma Train, baby. It don't stop rolling. Meanwhile, the worst of the worst. That's what Don Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney constantly called people who were being held in Guantanamo. This week, we learn a federal judge has ordered a Yemeni detainee released from Guantanamo, ruling that the government relied too heavily on problematic witnesses to make the case that he was a terrorist. Problematic witnesses. In a 45-page opinion, U.S. District Judge Gladys Kessler said the government failed to prove that Ali bin Ali Ahmed, Johnny Two Ali's, was his gangland. No, it was not his gangland name. Failed to prove that he supported the Taliban or Al-Qaeda. He was arrested in Pakistan, has been held at Gitmo since 2002. Nice 7 years for the lad. Much of the evidence against him was classified. In her heavily redacted opinion, Judge Kessler wrote that the government presented a mosaic of evidence. That's a word carefully chosen because that is indeed the template for our intelligence activities. To back up allegations that Ahmed fought in Afghanistan or received military-style training. She ruled the evidence was weak, inconsistent, or too speculative. She wrote the government produced virtually no credible evidence to prove that Ahmed fought U.S. or allied forces. The government's problems stemmed from its witnesses. The credibility of one was called into question by another judge. A second, statements were riddled with equivocation and speculation. A third alleged he was tortured and apparently suffered from psychosis. And a fourth prisoner provided only a vague statement that could have been about another detainee, she wrote. The worst of the worst. And they're talking about the detainees. Also at the top of the show, people who work in chemical plants that use or produce formaldehyde are more likely to develop cancers of the blood and lymphatic system, according to researchers from the National Institutes of Health. More likely, I guess, than people who don't. Patterns of cancer found in a group of former chemical plant workers. The findings are not definitive proof of formaldehyde as a cause of cancer, do warrant further study to assess the risk of the cancers in such work settings. So stay in your trailers, babe. It's okay. Need more research. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm aware that on the broadcast a couple weeks ago, I made an assumption that turned out to be just evidence of male foolishness when The spokesman for the Miss California pageant said that some of the girls, some of the lovely ladies, wear breast enhancements that don't require surgery, like the surgery that the pageant paid for on Miss California USA. he referred to one of the enhancements as chicken cutlets. And of course, you know, guy. I'm a guy, so I assumed he meant they went to the store. No, they don't. It's a silicone thing. Silicone thing. Silicone is what I'm talking to you through. Silicone is what you're looking at me through. So it's silicone. It's not real chicken cutlets. Speaking of which, Donald Trump, the ultimate diplomat, was asked about the when he announced this week that he was letting Carrie Prejean keep her crown as Miss California, despite the fact that she posed for some nude photos. He said, in some cases, the pictures were lovely. The ultimate diplomat. And, you know, what other billionaire would give of his time to teach at Learning Annex? And, ladies and gentlemen, if you wonder exactly how topsy-turvy the times we are living in are, forget about Dick Cheney wanting more secret stuff released and the Obama administration wanting more secret stuff kept secret. Just think about this. We've come to the point in our national history where we're now expected to feel sorry for car dealers. Hello, welcome to the show.
Of insanity, I ask myself, is all hope lost? Is there only pain, hatred, and misery? And each time I feel like this is right, there's one thing I want to know. What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? And as I walk, love and as I walk through this dead world, searching for light in the darkness of insanity, I ask myself, is our home lost? Is it only pain, hatred, misery? And each time I feel like it's inside, one thing I wanna know, what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? So funny about peace, love, and understanding. 'Cause every time I feel like this inside, one thing I wanna know. What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? Well, now what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? 'Cause each time I feel it slipping away, it makes me wanna cry. What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding?
From Columbus, Ohio, think of it. Think of the surprise, the shock, the exhilaration I feel
because I'm actually today originating from a radio station that actually carries this program. Hello, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, the award-winning News of the Warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
The potential contribution to sea level rise from a collapse of the West Antarctic ice sheet has been greatly overestimated. According to a new study published in the journal Science, scientists estimate global sea level would rise 3.3 meters, not 5 or 6, as previously thought. Put those water wings away, ladies and gentlemen. The Atlantic and Pacific seaboards of the U.S., even in the case of a partial collapse of the West Antarctic ice sheet, would experience the largest increases, threatening cities such as New York, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco. Long thought of as the sleeping giant with respect to sea level rise, Antarctica holds about 9 times the volume of ice of Greenland. Its western ice sheet is of particular interest to scientists due to its unusual below sea level topography, which is believed to make it inherently stable. That's intelligent design. But the area's potential contribution to sea level has been greatly overestimated, according to these new calculations. Some Michigan mammal species are rapidly expanding their ranges northward. Hello, Canada. Apparently in response to climate change, according to a new study. In the process, these historically southern species are replacing their northern counterparts. A new civil war of mammals, ladies and gentlemen. Sounds like it looms, but I don't know. That may be just me. Anyway, back to the study. The finding by researchers at the University of Michigan, Michigan State University, and Ohio's Miami University. Boy, Miami is moving north. Forget about the mammals. When you read about changes in flora and fauna related to climate warming, most of what you read is either predictive, they're talking about changes that are going to happen in the future, or it's restricted to single species living in extreme or remote environments like polar bears in the Arctic, says lead author Philip Myers. But this study documents things that are happening right now here at home. We're talking about the commonest mammals in Michigan, mammals that have considerable ecological impact. They disperse seeds, they eat the insects that kill trees, they disperse the fungus that grows in tree roots that is necessary for trees to grow, and they're the prey base, I know the feeling, for a huge number of carnivorous birds, mammals, and snakes. But we don't know enough about their natural history to know whether replacing a northern species with a southern equivalent is going to pass unnoticed or is going to be catastrophic. It could work either way. What we can say, this is again the author of the study, is that the potential is there for serious changes to happen, and it would be really smart of us to figure it out. But that will require a lot of detailed, focused ecological research. I think the time to start holding your breath begins now. Then we move to the Great Northwest. Climate change appears to be cutting the winter snowpack in Washington's Cascade Range by at least 20%, according to a researcher at the University of Washington. Rising temperatures means more of the snow falls with a high water content. What else does snow contain? I know, chicken cutlets. And melts and washes away long before it's needed by users in spring and summer months, the research found. All things equal, if you make it 1 degree Celsius warmer, then 20% of the snowpack goes away for the central Puget Sound Basin, the area we looked in, says Joseph Casola, a doctoral student in atmospheric sciences at the University of Washington. Lead pollution in the air. Here's another one of those kooky, you know, we thought it was bad. Now it's not so bad. Maybe it's even good because it's not bad. Things. Lead pollution in the air stimulates the formation of ice particles in clouds. A team of scientists from the USA, Germany, and Switzerland has found that particles containing lead are excellent seeds for the formation of ice crystals in clouds. This not only has a bearing on the formation of rain and other forms of precipitation, but may also have an influence on the global climate. This is because the heat given off from the Earth's surface is more efficiently radiated into space by ice clouds with lead-containing particles than has been hitherto realized. Get that lead back in the gas, quick. In comparison to clouds with a low lead content, clouds with a high lead content thus actually help cool the Earth. Over the last 20 years, there has been, as you know, a continuing decrease in the rate of man-caused lead emissions. This may mean that the greenhouse effect is now even more pronounced because lead-containing clouds that once previously helped limit it are reduced. And we try to be so good. Now, to the argument that climate change, whatever it is not caused by man, but by something happening on the sun, a favorite argument of Senator James Imhoff, the lead climate change denier in the Senate. He's from Oklahoma. Climate never changes. This troubling hypothesis about how the sun may impact global warming is, according to Science Daily, finally laid to rest. Carnegie Mellon University's Peter Adams, along with Jeff Pierce from Dalhousie University in Halifax, have developed a model to test the controversial hypothesis that says changes in the sun are causing global warming. The hypothesis they tested was that increased solar activity reduces cloudiness by changing cosmic rays. So when clouds decrease, more sunlight is let in, causing the Earth to warm. Some climate change skeptics have tried to use this hypothesis to suggest that greenhouse gases are not the culprit. In research published in Geophysical Research Letters, damn it, a kid threw my copy in the lawn sprinkler, and highlighted in the May 1st edition of Science, Adams and Pierce report the first atmospheric simulations of changes in atmospheric ions and particle formation resulting from variations in the sun and cosmic rays. They find that changes in the concentration of particles that affect clouds are 100 times too small to affect the climate. That's the part I understood. Climate change isn't only bad for the Earth, it may be bad for your health, especially if you have allergies or asthma, says USA Today. Global warming is making pollen seasons last longer, creating more ozone in the air, and even expanding the areas where insects flourish, putting more people with bee allergies at greater risk, according to experts. Climate change will cause impacts in every area. Wet areas will get wetter, and drier climates are getting drier, says Jeffrey Domain, director of the Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Center of Alaska. These changes will mean more people with allergies and asthma will suffer. In wet areas, mold allergies will spike, while in drier areas, pollens and other airborne irritants will become more of a problem, he says. Problems caused by climate change are already evident, especially in Alaska, he says. There's been a significant shift in the ecosystem because of the rises in winter temperatures. On the average, Alaska's temp has risen 6.4 degrees in winter and 3.4 degrees overall. And the earlier the snow melts, the earlier the pollen cycle begins. The plant and tree life is also changing. It's estimated that 90% of the Alaskan tundra will be forested by 2100, and that the types of trees are most common. They're changing, too. The warmer temperatures are also attracting insects. In the past, Alaska hasn't had too many stinging insects. But, says the researcher, northern Alaska has recently seen a 620% increase in the number of people seeking care for bee stings. But, you know, that's a better look for the lips than collagen. A new Lancet is the British medical journal, report on health and social effects of climate change says that climate change is the biggest global health threat of the 21st century. They engaged in a year-long research project along with University College of London on the health and social effects of climate change. The report has just been released. First, there's a massive gap in information, they say, an astonishing lack of knowledge about how we should respond to the negative health effects of climate change. Second, since the effects will hit the poor hardest, we humans have an immense task before us to address the inadequacies of health systems to protect people in most at-risk countries. There's a technology challenge. Technologies do have the potential to help us adapt to changes in climate, but these technologies have to be developed out of greater research investments into climate change science. The fourth challenge, they say, is political, creating the conditions for low-carbon living. And finally, there's the question of how we adapt our institutions to make climate change the priority it needs to be. I don't know what they're doing up the rope there, ladies and gentlemen, but I have an idea. News of the Warm, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now to reassure you further.
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an
inspector general.
Oh, yeah. U.S. prosecutors and the FBI are investigating whether two Securities and Exchange Commission lawyers illegally used non-public agency information to bet on stocks. This is from the Securities and Exchange Commission's Inspector General, David Kotz. Kotz, who told Congress that he was examining whether frequent trades by this pair broke agency rules, has referred the case to the U.S. attorneys in Washington after finding evidence that bets might amount to insider trading, he wrote in his latest report. Both lawyers remain at the agency and deny improper conduct. The report faults the agency for inadequately monitoring trades by employees, Security and Exchange Commission, ladies and gentlemen, and relying on an honor system. It's a regulatory agency relying on an honor system. Ain't that cute? Irony in Washington, the lawyers frequently discussed stocks at work, traded in at least one company under investigation, and didn't properly disclose some transactions, says the Inspector General report. One lawyer made 247 trades in the 2 years ending January 2008. The agency has essentially no compliance system in place to ensure that employees don't abuse the tremendous amount of non-public information they have at their disposal, says Kotz. The SEC is already working on steps to guard against potential misconduct. Never too late. Already, says Bloomberg News. And the report doesn't conclude that insider trading actually occurred. But you never know. News from the Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen. That, too, is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. This is Le Show, and what's happening in the new Iraq? We really are taking our attention off that lovely country these days, because you know, the whole AFPAC thing is happening. But the L.A. dog trainer, of all things, they're still doing that? Okay. They report from Baghdad. The financial crisis that has sent economies reeling the world over is finally seeping into Iraq with potentially grave implications for the stability of the country. Why, I thought the surge fixed everything. Car sales have plummeted. In Iraq, what about junkers with XM in them? You still not buying? Okay. The once booming property market has skidded to a halt. Why, it's as if it's a regular Vegas. Electronic goods that were flying off the shelves a few months back are staying put. Well, I expect a call from Shab Shab on that subject. And in a country still threatened by an insurgency, more than a quarter of the men ages 18 to 29 are unemployed. Iraq did receive a revenue bonanza from high oil prices last year, and its banks weren't invited to the big party, but optimistic projections made as recently as February that Iraq would remain immune to the global downturn have proved horribly wrong, phrase from the LA Times. Some people said Iraq wouldn't be affected, says Bassam Jamil Anton, an economist with the Iraqi Federation of Industries. He adds, quote, those people were stupid. The collapse in oil prices from $147 a barrel last year to $50 today has gutted revenues in a country that depends on oil for 90% of its income. U.S. reconstruction funding is dried up. Bye-bye. And no new resources are likely to be forthcoming from the Obama administration. Let's hope. This year, Iraq is cushioned by surpluses from previous years, but next year there is a real danger the government will be in a position where they basically run out of money, says a senior U.S. official. Iraq has launched a major drive for foreign investment. Hey, I got a couple on me. But private investors have shown little inclination to commit resources to a country where bombings and shootings are still a regular occurrence. Well, how about investing in a bomb factory? The number one reason is security. What happened in these past weeks didn't help, says the finance minister, referring to a sharp increase in high-profile bombings in April. Iraqi and U.S. officials frequently draw a link between the need for economic development and the potential for Iraqis to take up arms against their government. We cannot talk about stable security without economic progress, says the prime minister. The shortfall in revenues has forced the government to impose a freeze on new hirings. At least 30,000 planned recruits to the police and army are on hold. Well, they got a great excuse. They didn't want to hire them anyway because they're Sunnis. But now they don't have to because they don't got no money. The new Iraq, ladies and gentlemen, make you stand proud, doesn't it? The New York Times reported this week that the economy and its dollars, not dollars, is acting as a negative incentive for people from Mexico to come across the border to the United States. And that's not all, as we'll discover in News from Outside the Bubble. From the Times of London, a growing number of British expatriates are heading home as the sun sets on their Spanish dream. The low value of the English pound, Britain's pound, sorry, the end of Spain's decade-long building bonanza, and the global financial meltdown have conspired to make Britain a more attractive place to many expatriates, despite the deepening recession at home. The Spanish sunshine and way of life cannot hide the dire recession into which Spain is falling. Unemployment stands at 17.5%. and more than 4 million people out of work. The property market, which employed large numbers of Britons in southern Spain, is stagnant. No new homes have been built for 4 months. People are going back because there's still more opportunities at home, and you have the support of family and friends. Many British expatriates speak little Spanish, so applying for unemployment or other benefits might prove difficult. No official figures exist for how many are heading home. That makes it easy to write this story, doesn't it? For the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, the British Embassy estimates that 1 million Britons live at least part of the year in Spain. Many returning expatriates say that although things are tough in Britain, competing for jobs with Spaniards who have the advantage of the language and family contacts often makes it harder in Spain. For thousands of pensioners who hope to spend their twilight years sunning themselves on the coast, the fall in the pound has forced them to head home. But wait, that's not all. Also in Iraq, Iraq has lost more than half the Christians who once called it home, mostly since the war began, and few who fled have plans to return, according to the Associated Press. The Pope called attention to their plight during a Mideast visit this week. The number of Arab Christians has plummeted across the Mideast in recent years as increasing numbers seek to move to the West, saying they feel increasingly unwelcome in the Middle East and want a better life abroad. But the exodus has been particularly stark in Iraq. The AP has found that hundreds of thousands of Christians have fled. The situation holds practical implications for Iraq's future. Christians historically made up a large portion of the country's middle class, including key jobs as doctors, engineers, intellectuals, and civil servants. The vast majority of the exodus has happened since the 2003 invasion. The State Department says as many as 1.2 million Christians remained until 2003. Christians first began leaving Iraq after the first Gulf War. Few of them contemplate going back, according to the UN High Commissioner on Refugees. They simply do not feel safe enough. They cannot sufficiently count on state security or any other force to protect them. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. It's just people are staying home or people are going away. There's no trend. No trend discernible so far. That's a copyrighted feature, too. You know that. The next thing on the agenda would be what's happening with President Obama. And the answer, of course, is plenty. He's doing a commencement speech on Sunday, today, at Notre Dame. Very controversial. He's made some controversial decisions this week, or announced some controversial decisions this week. Going back on some campaign rhetoric. He has now decided to keep the military tribunals at Guantanamo open, even as he pledges still to close Guantanamo. That will leave some military commissions looking for new office space somewhere outside the continental United States, I would think. A tribunal ship. Yes, he's after a 120-day moratorium on the commissions, the tribunals, his administration announced this week that they will be reconstituted, just like orange juice, and just about as good as reconstituted orange juice, with all of the nutrients missing. And he also announced this week that the photographs of the more than 2,000 photographs that the Pentagon was being court-ordered to release in response to a Freedom of Information Act suit. The administration is now going to oppose that. They had announced a month ago they were not going to oppose it. It's still going to be up to a judge, so it's just an easy way of the president saying, "It's not. I didn't do it. The judge made me do it." But still, the story of the photographs is interesting to me, partly because it re-illustrates again the nature of the bubble in our nation's capital and associated news capitals such as New York. This weekend, the Sydney Morning Herald newspaper in Australia published 60 of those photographs, ladies and gentlemen. 60 of the 2,000 that the Pentagon is still holding secret. And still the debate rages in Washington as to whether those photographs should be released. And today, Sunday, on one of the Sunday Yak shows, I think on CNN, Hillary Rosen, a liberal spokesman, said, in arguing for the photos to be released, well, they're going to leak out at some point. Babe, they already have. Of course, she used to be head of the Recording Industry Association of America. whose Sue Our Customers policy made the recording industry a shining beacon in the current boom. So the photos are out. Everybody in the rest of the world knows that. Apparently the people in Washington preparing for their Sunday Yak Show appearances are so busy refining their talking points they can't bother to read the papers on the weekend. So if you want to do something that escapes the notice of the yakking class in Washington, do it on Saturday and get it covered in the rest of the world. But so there are those two issues that on which the president's policy appears to have changed. And another change, the White House Office of Public Liaison is now the Office of Public Engagement, part of a new effort to reach out to the American people. The Obama administration announced this week it was renaming and refocusing the office that it calls the front door to the White House. He said the office will have a new mission to help Americans take a more active role in government. The leadership of the office won't change. But the guy in the Harold and Kumar movies is giving up acting for now to move to Washington and serve as an associate director in that office. It'll hold town hall meetings and other events in person and online. The site will have video visits to the White House, blog posts, information about how Americans can get involved. I look forward to hearing more from you, said the president. Sounds like CNN. Tell us what you think. I don't want to know what I think. I want to know what you know. Anyway, the front door to the White House has gotten a makeover. Maybe we should walk in.
Father knows best.
Well, good morning, Michelle. Muesli looks good.
Mm-hmm. Made it myself.
Well, you know, they'll do anything around here to make you happy, honey.
Mm-hmm. Except learn how to make muesli.
Well, be a little understanding. They have spent 8 years of breakfast making omelet fritters.
Well, I'm just trying to make a decision here.
The sleeveless or the three-quarter sleeveless?
You know, I did get a higher score in my LSATs than a certain first black president I could mention. But look here, I'm trying to decide whether or not to accept this TV offer.
Well, they want you to take Miss California's crown away from her?
They want me to appear as me on a Family Guy special.
Oh, that's that cartoon show.
Mm-hmm. It's an hour-long special. The Family Guy Goes to Bangkok.
Well, I'd lean on the side of... I'll think about it. But, you know, honey, that's what we've got advisors for.
Daddy, did you just turn into, like, George Bush?
Oh, hey, Malia, somebody got up on the wrong side of 10 years old this morning.
Dad, I'm serious. Everybody at school is saying you bit the big weenie, whatever that means.
Well, now, Malia, baby, whatever it means, you pay no attention to what everybody at school says. You're the president's daughter, and you're just like everybody else.
Mom, they're saying Daddy did a 180. Is that like a dating type thing?
It's not physically possible, honey. Now, look, darling, I know that what your friends at school say can hurt sometimes, so let's try to help Mommy for a moment. Do we think she should go on Family Guy as herself?
Daddy, if you really went back on your campaign rhetoric... She'll be lucky to be invited on American Dad.
Look, sweetie, you're right. Daddy did say something different during the campaign about military commissions. And Daddy did say we'd release those torture photos before we decided to not release them.
Barack, are you sure you want to do this?
Malia, have you learned in school what the word pragmatism means?
Yeah.
Good.
It means biting the big weenie.
Bo, get back in here.
Hi, Uncle Ram.
Hi, Malia. Bo.
Oh, that's okay. He can come in.
You won't say that when you see what he did in there.
Rami, did Bo poop in the Jefferson study?
Well, let's just say Jefferson won't be studying in there today.
Bad dog. Bad doggy.
Now, Malia, what do you think we should do with such a bad dog?
Punish him.
Mm-hmm. Should we read him his Miranda rights?
No.
Should we release photographs of Michelle bopping him on the nose?
Don't you dare say yes, young lady.
No.
Well, should we water hose him?
Maybe. He doesn't like that.
Well, that could remind him that we don't like this.
Ooh.
Oh, it's just a little bow poop. But maybe my little girl has learned something about doggies and detainees.
Things look different once you're in the White House, don't they, Daddy?
They sure do, darling. They sure do. Well, Michelle, honey, you look like you just got a brainstorm.
I sure did.
Oh.
I decided to hold out for a regular episode of Family Guy.
Rami?
Yes, sir.
You know, if you got to be surrounded by girls, make sure you're surrounded by smart ones.
Yes, sir.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The trip was supposed to be a special gift for Mother's Day. Dominga Lopez Santos' family flew her in from San Juan, Puerto Rico, with her bag with medication and her leg brace. It was the first time the 73-year-old woman would have seen family in Philadelphia in 5 years, but when her U.S. Airways flight arrived on May 6, her luggage did not. "It makes me angry," says her daughter. "I'm so sad because the trip has been ruined for all of us." Inside the missing bags, Lopez Santos' diabetes medicine and a custom-made leg brace that has allowed her to mobility since she suffered a stroke. The airline's response, says the daughter, was, quote, "We apologize, we're doing everything we can, continue to call back." That went on for 3 days, unquote. Now, a week later, there's still no luggage. The daughter says many agents were rude, never made promised follow-up calls, and never offered compensation for the $1,000 custom brace or the medication. It affects her, she says, because she can't walk. You have to carry her or put her in a wheelchair for her to do whatever she needs to do. In a statement, the airline said, quote, "We are actively working to locate this missing bag and, of course, apologize for the inconvenience this has caused. We have reached out to this family and are working to find a satisfactory solution." U.S. Airways told a local TV station the family never told agents there was a brace in the bag. An hour after a TV station called U.S. Airways, an agent called the family from the airline offering to help. He kept asking me, "What can I do to make your mom stay happy?" says the daughter. "I mean, find the bag." I was just in Philadelphia for a couple days, ladies and gentlemen. The only really bad thing about that city is having to fly U.S. Air to get there. Dateline Cleveland, Tennessee, Bradley County Mayor D. Gary Davis apologized this week for his remarks Monday when he told the county commissioner not to hide behind a skirt tail and suggested the commissioner had been hit too many times in the head. "Unfortunately, in a moment of heated debate at Monday's commission session, I did not live up to my own personal standards and no doubt disappointed many people," the mayor said in a written statement. A Minnesota couple using people-to-people ambassador programs over the death of their... suing people-to-people ambassador programs over the death of their son on a trip to Japan expressed dismay that the Spokane-based company used their son's name in a promotional letter. "They stop at nothing," says Cheryl Hill of Mound, Minnesota, whose 16-year-old diabetic son Tyler became ill and died after he participated in a climb up Mount Fuji during a people-to-people trip in July 2 years ago. People-to-people president Peg Thomas says the company has apologized for sending the letter in error. A wrongful death lawsuit has been filed against the educational travel company, alleging that his death could have been prevented if he had received immediate medical care. They claim that trip leaders refused the teen's request for medical attention. But a friend of the Hills in April received a letter signed by the CEO of the nonprofit People-to-People based in Kansas thanking for the friend for recommending Tyler for the trip and asking whether he could recommend any other youth for the program. They've apologized. Dateline Los Angeles, Oprah Winfrey has apologized to author James Frey for shaming him on her TV chat show amid revelations he had fabricated parts of his memoir. Winfrey's apology was first reported on the website of Vanity Fair, with the author saying he felt grateful for Winfrey's gesture. The two have a tumultuous history. Winfrey said she felt duped on the air and went on to accuse the author of betraying his readers. Her berating of Frey was among the most public embarrassments for the author, who apologized back then for lying. A month after the broadcast, his publisher dropped him. Winfrey and Frey appear to... And by the way, the last half of Winfrey is Frey. Appear to have reconciled. Frey said Winfrey called him last fall to tell him, "I felt I owe you an apology," and she explained that her lambasting of him sprang from her sense of feeling betrayed. "It was a nice surprise to hear from her, and I really appreciated the call and the sentiment," he told Vanity Fair. His latest book came out last year to mixed reviews. Dallas Mavericks, they're out of the playoffs, but their owner, Mark Cuban, has apologized on his blog to the mother of Denver Nuggets player Kenyon Martin for calling her son a thug. "I shouldn't have said anything," says Mark Cuban. It's a little late for that, Mark. Bleary-eyed commuters passing through London were among the first to witness the opening blast of one of the most remarkable advertising campaigns in recent years. A small drawing in the corner has the logo of London's Evening Standard, its only evening paper that charges money for its readership. The word is "sorry for losing touch" on the ad. Other slogans will say "sorry for being negative," "sorry for taking you for granted," "sorry for being complacent," and "sorry for being predictable." The campaign comes in response to, yes, market research, commissioned by the newspaper's new editor, which found that Londoners felt the paper was too negative and did not meet their needs. And the paper even said sorry on its front page. Google this week blamed a system error for service disruptions that took down many of the services. We're very sorry that it happened, and you can be sure we'll be working even harder, blah, blah, blah. Arkansas State Senator Kim Hendren, who is currently the only announced Republican candidate for U.S. Senator against incumbent Blanche Lincoln, has apologized for referring to Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer of New York as, quote, that Jew at a county Republican meeting last week. Here's a good explanation, though. I don't use a teleprompter, and occasionally I put my foot in my mouth. At the meeting, I was attempting to explain that unlike Senator Schumer, I believe in traditional values, like we used to see on the Andy Griffith Show. No Jews there. I made the mistake of referring to Senator Schumer as that Jew, and I should not have put it that way, as this took away from what I was trying to say. When I referred to him as Jewish, it wasn't because I don't like Jewish people. I shouldn't have gotten into this Jewish business. Teleprompters are available, sir. CBS Sports golf analyst David Faraday apologized to two top Democrats for joking that any U.S. soldier would kill them if given the opportunity. He wrote glowingly of George Bush in an essay for Dallas Magazine and said that military support their former commander-in-chief and that support could threaten the lives of Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. He's apologized. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown has apologized for members of his parliamentary party that have submitted fake expense claims. A 109-year-old woman got a royal apology from Prince William for his mom, the Queen, sending the same a postcard congratulating the elderly lady on her birthday, and each year the postcard having a picture of the Queen wearing the same dress. And the apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, are a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now back to President Obama for a moment. You know that, as I say, he's not going to release those photographs, even though they've been released. And in his statement saying he wasn't going to release those photographs, he said they'd already served their purpose in investigations of, quote, a small number of individuals, unquote. Those cases were all concluded by 2004, and the president said, quote, the individuals who were involved have been identified and appropriate actions have been taken, unquote. The Pentagon conducted 200 investigations into alleged abuse connected with the photos that are now in question. The administration did not provide an accounting of how those investigations turned out. A recent report, a unanimous report of the Senate Armed Services Committee, said that decisions made in Washington, part of the CIA, Justice Department decisions to ratchet up forms of interrogation, leaked over into the military interrogation system when the former commandant of Guantanamo, Major General Jeffrey Miller, was transferred to Iraq. And yet, now the second president is saying it's just a few bad apples.
They always say a fish stinks from its head. But what if it started at the tail instead? It's just a few bad apples messing up the bunch. A few bad apples bringing up your lunch. Just a few germs can start a common cold. Just a few cells dying off make you so very old. It's just a few bad apples. They're so rotten to the core. A few bad apples, maybe several more. Don't be angry, save the outrage. Don't get mad. It's just those few bad apples, not spending time in chapels. Just those few apples going bad. You know, it's just a waste of time looking round the top of that tree, 'cause the rotten fruit is hanging so close to you and me. Just a few drums can start up a parade. Just a few defective oranges can spoil the Minute Maid. It's just those few bad apples, and it happens every time. a few bad apples, and no suspects are so prime. You might as well change the uniform to plaid. They'll always be those apples, drinking more than Snapples. It's those few apples going bad. So bad, so bad.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show from Columbus, Ohio. The program will return next week at the same time over these same stations on NPR worldwide throughout Europe, USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America by the shortwave giant WBCQ The Planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it on your computer, harryshearer.com. And KCRW.com, available on your smartphone from Stitcher.com, available as a free download to members from www.audible.com/the show, and available as a free podcast sometimes from KCRW.com. And it'd be just like them fixing the roads if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All right, thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is LeMail. No, it's not. That's about 5 years ago. The email address for this broadcast and the playlists contained hereon of the show, music, play. What? You can find it all at harryshearer.com, which is fixing my syntax as we speak. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks, and to John McKinley and Dan Michalko here at WCBE. In Columbus, Ohio, for help in making today's broadcast broadcastable. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from Columbus. Goodbye, Columbus.